Carrie, do you have any changes?
I just have one addition to the warrants. Yeah.
Okay, good evening. Welcome to the Wednesday, October 9th, 2019 meeting of the Oceana Community Services District. May we have a roll call, please?
Director Gibson?
Here.
Director Villa?
Here.
Director Plogle?
Yes, here.
Vice President White?
Here.
President Austin?
Here. Okay, will you all join me in the flag salute, please?
Ready? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. Now that brings us to agenda review.
Go ahead, Carrie. Comments too. Nope, you first.
President Austin, members of the board, we have added a warrant to item 8A. It's for $454.32. It's to pay our Rabobank credit card so we wouldn't incur the fees before it's due.
Okay.
And, Madam President, on the ordering of agenda items, recommendation, first off, I think we might want to bring the presentation up right away regarding proclaiming October 6th to 12th, 2019 as Fire Prevention Week, even prior to closed session. Yeah. And then the thought specifically on closed session is to consider 5A first, and then we may need more time on 5B and C, and so the thought is to reconvene closed session at the end of the meeting to cover 5B and 5C.
All right.
I make a motion we approve the agenda as amended.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, agenda's review. So then we will go on, we'll do public comment for items not on the agenda, and then move into the special presentation. So do we have any public comment for items that are not on the agenda? Okay, seeing none. Then we'll move on to special presentations and reports. It's the adoption of a resolution proclaiming October 6th through the 12th, 2019, as Fire Prevention Week. So this, I will read the resolution. Are you... Chief Lieberman is coming.
And come along. A little shy. Thank you.
Did you want to say something before we...
Perhaps after.
After, okay. Okay, I'll read the resolution now. Resolution proclaiming October 6th to the 12th, 2019, as Fire Prevention Week. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas the Oceano Community Services District is committed to ensuring the safety and security of all those living in and visiting Oceano, and whereas fire is a serious public safety concern both locally and nationally, and homes are the locations where people are at greatest risk from fire, and whereas home fires killed 2,630 people in the United States in 2017, according to the National Fire Protection Association. Fire departments in the United States responded to 357,000 home fires. Whereas the majority of U.S. fire deaths, 4 out of 5, occur at home each year. Whereas the fire death rate per 1,000 home fires reported to U.S. fire departments was 4% higher in 2017 than in 1980. Whereas when the smoke alarm sounds, Oceano residents may have less than 2 minutes to escape to safety. And whereas Oceano residents who have planned and practiced a home fire escape plan are more prepared and will therefore be more likely to survive a fire. And whereas Oceano's residents should make a home escape plan, drawing a map of each level of the home showing all doors and windows. And whereas Oceano's residents should practice the home fire escape plan with everyone in the household, including visitors. And whereas Oceano's residents should practice the home fire escape drill at least twice a year during the day and at night. And whereas Oceano's residents should teach children to escape on their own in case adults can't help them. And whereas Oceano's residents should make sure everyone in the home knows how to call 911 or the local emergency number from a cell phone or a neighbor's phone. And whereas Oceano's residents should practice using different ways out. And whereas Oceano residents in a real emergency should get low and go under smoke to get out quickly. And whereas Oceano's residents should get out and stay out, never going back inside the home for people, pets, or things. And whereas Oceano's residents are responsive to public education measures and are able to take action to increase their safety from fire, especially in the home. And whereas the 2019 Fire Prevention Week theme, "Not Every Hero Wears a Cape, Plan and Practice Your Escape," effectively serves to remind us that we need to take personal steps to increase our safety from fire. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed by the Board of Directors of the Oceano Community Services District that October 6th through the 12th, 2019, is Fire Prevention Week throughout the community and urges all the people of Oceano to be aware of their surroundings, look for available ways out of buildings and structures in the event of a fire or other emergency, respond when the smoke alarm sounds by exiting the building immediately, and to support the many public safety activities and efforts of the Five Cities Fire Authority during Fire Prevention Week 2019. That's the end of the resolution. Would you like to say something, Chief Lieberman?
I would. Thank you, President Austin and Board. Steve Lieberman, Fire Chief. Thank you for sharing that long proclamation about Fire Prevention Week. I think the biggest takeaway is we're looking for the community to actively engage and take that added responsibility of developing their plan. If you have children, have the kids take a leadership role in developing the plan and practicing it. As we know from today's news, there's 800,000 people being affected in Northern California with an electrical shutoff, and another 200,000 potentially at risk in Southern California. And that emergency preparedness that we're asking you to consider in the proclamation would also assist you through events such as this. So, again, we appreciate it. I'd like to have Captain Brian Leather share with you some additional fire prevention week activities we are doing. We did have an open house on Saturday that was well attended, and we got to meet a lot of young citizens. But, Captain Leathers, please.
Stage left. Thank you, Captain Leathers. Obviously, I'm actually stationed here at Station 3. I've been here since 1995, so I'm one of your guys' members. So, big event happening tomorrow. It's a Central Coast Burn Relay sponsored by Alicia Ann Rouge Burn Foundation. I've been lucky to do it for the past 20-some years. It's been in our area for 28 years. We go to local schools throughout the county and teach a burn prevention message to them and give them a memory process. If we get at least one person out there that needs help from being a burn survivor, then, you know, we've done our job. So we'll be doing that all day. So you may hear sirens throughout the county. It's just us. Don't get too crazy. So we'll be doing two different routes. There'll be one in the South County going from Napomo all the way up to Los Osos. And then we'll have another one going from Cambria all the way to San Miguel. So you'll have two different routes. So you'll see a lot. And then we'll end up at Farmer's Market and do a big presentation for the Burn Foundation. So it's great that we're basically the sponsors of it and glad that we could do it.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. We appreciate all
Linda.
Of
you. I just also wanted to thank you. The open house was really, really nice on Saturday. A lot of kids, and they sure do like fire trucks, don't they?
Thank you.
Picture with the board, maybe?
Squeeze in, or
yeah. Trust us.
Split the difference here.
Yeah.
All right, keys.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Don't make a motion.
Oh. Okay.
Public comment.
Public comment on the fire resolution. Seeing none, then I'll entertain a motion.
I just had a couple questions.
Okay.
Why are we Why are we making this in the middle of the week? I was wondering why we didn't bring this earlier. Seems like we're...
It's pretty customary to do resolutions of proclamation in the week that it's Fire Prevention Week or the day, okay. If there's a day.
And I was also wondering if there's an open house plan for our station here?
Next year.
Good evening. Again, Steve Lieberman. Grover Beach was our first rotation from the Arroyo Grande station, so next year's event will be here at the Oceano Station.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
I make a motion we adopt a resolution proclaiming October 6th, 12th, 2019 as Fire Prevention Week.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Can we get a roll call, please?
Director Villa?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Plogle?
Yes.
President Austin?
Yes.
And historically, doesn't Fire Prevention Week mark the Great Chicago Fire when Mrs. O'Leary's cow kicked over the lantern in the barn, according to myth.
So we did that. Now we want to go back to our closed session, public employment. Is that what we want to do now? Okay, so now we're going to go back to our closed session.
Is there any public comment on 5A?
Is there any public comment on closed session? Okay, seeing none.
Okay. Then the board will adjourn to closed session for item 5A only. This is public employment pursuant to Government Code Section 54957B1 in regards to the general manager position.
We should not be long. If you want.
Hiring.
Okay, I'll call the meeting back to order. We return from closed session. Do you have a report from closed session?
There is no reportable action out of closed session.
Thank you. Move on now to staff reports. You're going to do the staff report for operations?
Tony's going to do that, but I was hoping to lead off with my staff report first. Just real briefly, I think as some of the board members may know, that at the Integrated Waste Management Authority meeting today, that the board of directors of IWMA did pass the ordinance regulating the polystyrene ordinance. The second issue that I want to mention is actually an omission on my part on the agenda today. I failed to put an agenda item for the emergency actions associated with our wells. Tony is going to give an update on what our status is, but because that's not on the agenda, I want to make it clear to everybody that over the next two-week period, we will be taking no actions. that we did in the last period, since your last board meeting, did issue a purchase order to have well number 4 scrubbed and the cleaning done. If the results are that it's going to be in a good condition so that to proceed with the acquisition of the equipment to be reinstalled, that's above my purchasing authority. So we will not be taking any action of that nature and reporting back to your board at the next board meeting. So basically, from today's date to the next board meeting, we're just going to maintain a status quo, and no staff will take no actions other than what has already been taken. And with that, turn it over to Tony.
Good evening, board. Tony Maricino. Excuse me. So I'll start off with where Pavel left off. So well 8, we met with the electrician and the electrical engineer, troubleshot every possible scenario. So it has a multiple starter on here. You have a starter 1 and a starter 2. The first starter gets it going about half speed, and the second starter will kick in and wrap it completely up. So what we did, or what they did, was they expanded the time between the first starter and the second. So it allows the electricity to come back down and not be at such a high spike, and then the second one will kick in. It's about a 4-second delay. So that appears to be working. We turned it on and off about 10 times. It didn't fail. It didn't trip anything. But we haven't ran it for a whole day yet, and we will this weekend. As for well 4, the chemicals are ordered. The acid has been ordered. So hopefully they can get out later this week or beginning of next week and do the scrub, pump it out, and then they'll video the casing to ensure that the screens are intact and we can move forward, as the GM said, with replacing the well. As for Lopez, it's currently at 53.9% full, 26,640 acre feet. We had 0 SSOs for the month of September, and we've met our Lopez deliveries at 303. We're currently at our carryover now, and we'll be taking state water later this month. All right. For the past couple weeks, we've had our weekly samples, 14 work orders, 15 USAs, 9 customer service calls. We had 2 after-hour call-outs. One was for an unlock, and the other one was for old Wands' service line erupted, broke on Sunday. All right, so we were working on all our hotspots for the laterals. 2300 Cienega, space 47, we had to repair the lateral. As you all know, everything's put together basically with hose clamps. So luckily, we only had to do the driveway. They had got to make some repairs on their side at the same time. They went relatively smooth. We're still continuing to do sewer cleaning. We had to fix a tripping hazard that was over by Fairgrove. It was part of an air vac that was installed years ago. We took care of that. Excuse me. We're still installing meters. We did a job walk for the generator for well 8. Replaced a 4-inch meter at the county parks. The RV repair shop for Pismo Coast Village, they're back in the swing of things where they're going to be tying into our system with the fire flow, fire protection, meter, and sewer. The drainage project, they are currently boring underneath the railroad. They still have quite a bit of work left for our system to get relocated. I attended an IS-100 and IS-700 classes. That's pretty much covered. We're just staying busy with sewer cleaning and a lot of meter replacements.
Great.
Were you going to cover the Ready 311 monthly stats?
Oh, I'm sorry about that. I had it right here in my hand. So the Ready 311 monthly stats for 2019, as you can see the graph there, the actual orange is when they had trash pickups. So as you can see, in September of this year, we had 56 311 tickets, but a lot of that, the trash company actually picked up. because Friday's not enough time, so Monday wasn't enough time. There's a lot of trash here, so it took them to about Wednesday, and then we went around and picked up whatever else was left. So a lot of these 311 tickets were already taken care of. But as you can see, it is being utilized.
And so as a little bit of additional clarification, your board has authorized the district to fund the large picket, large item pickups in fall event. And we've had discussions with South County Sanitary, Inc. The community's overall participation in the fall cleanup has really increased a lot. And that's where it's created a challenge for them to pick everything up on the Friday. The challenge has even gotten bigger, so we are discussing with them right now how to make that happen more, make sure it gets done quicker, more responsive, and we may also want to have that as a future agenda item for additional board consideration.
Yeah, they didn't pick up my bulky items until Wednesday,
yeah.
By which point people had started dumping trash on them. So, I don't know if anybody else was in that boat, but maybe we need to talk in the future about staggering the pickup days or something.
We were contacted by a number of different individuals within the community, so definitely need to follow up with them on that. In some ways, it's the result of a good program because we are having a lot of community participation, but it represents another new challenge that we need to make sure that gets addressed.
Thank you very much, Tony. Okay, then, Chief Lieberman, did you have anything you wanted to? Okay. And the sheriff's not here, so we'll go down to our board of directors and outside committee reports.
Did you have any more? I had a couple questions for you. I've heard that there's a Central Coast Blue memorandum of agreement or memorandum of understanding that's in the works. Is that something that we're going to see on our agenda in the near future? Or
Your board will have a discussion on that. I'm not sure of the precise timing.
Oh, and the Facebook page for the district. When's that going to go live?
I think we want to make sure, depending on your action on number 9A, coordinate that with the new general manager.
Oh, well, that's not till...
No. We'll do it before then. Oh. But part of the thoughts is the initial posting, depending on action number 9A also.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Now we'll go to board of directors and outside committee reports. Did you have a report, Director Ripple?
Yes, I attended the RAC meeting. The main item on the agenda there was a presentation on base flow results for in-stream requirements for ecosystem species by a woman from the Creeklands Conservation, which basically was just talking about having enough water and good quality water in streams for salmon, because salmon are an indicator species. So if we see healthy salmon in the streams, then we know we've got good water quality and other species in the ecosystem will be well supported. So that's pretty interesting.
Did they talk about steelhead or salmon?
Steelhead, sorry.
Thank you. I was just curious.
Director Gibson?
Nothing to report.
Director Villa?
I attended the IWMA also, and it was nice to know. I kind of knew it was going to pass, but it was nice to actually, see it in person and hear our letter of support being read by Director Rapolo, really nicely written. So, yeah.
Great. Okay, I attended the sanitation district last week, and we're moving forward with the redundancy project. We are negotiating with a construction management firm, and we anticipate a contract to look at on November 6th. And we approved a contract with Rincon consultants, and they're the ones who do the environmental monitoring during the project. So that was $66,000, and we approved that. And so that's the main thing, is we're moving forward with the redundancy project. I think that's it, other than our next meeting, we're rotating, so the next meeting would be 6 p.m. at the Grover Beach City Hall on, what is it, October 23rd. When's our next meeting? It'd be we only meet once a month, so I don't think I have it in here.
Me not.
Anyway, our next meeting is going to be at Grover Beach. We're no longer be meeting in here. I don't have the exact date of the meeting, but we meet every other. We meet once a month. Yeah. So that's for that. Is there any public comment on the reports? Okay, so we'll go to our consent agenda. Review and approval of the cash disbursements and the minutes from September 25th and the special meeting of September 25th. Any comments on this?
Yeah, I have a comment on the September 25th regular meeting. I was absent the first half, but I did come the second half.
Okay. Any other comments on the questions on the consent agenda? We have any public comments?
I had one, and I don't know if we need to pull this for discussion, but on the payment to Godby Corporation for $14,750, I was wondering if there's anything in our agreement that reflects that they needed to have a minimum sample size, since they only surveyed 157 people instead of 250. It seems like we didn't get what we were anticipating for the payment.
I did inquire with them on that particular question. I cannot refer back to the agreement, though. So what we might want to do is pull that item, consider it later in the agenda, and we have the opportunity to, you know, grab the agreement and take a look at it.
Okay. I'll pull 8A then.
Oh, I guess my recommendation was
just pull that particular
item okay. From 8A.
Well, I'd like to pull the Godby Corporation payment from item 8A.
Second that.
Okay, so do we vote all in favor of moving that from the, or do we just?
Yeah, you don't need a vote.
It's not a motion.
The
yet.
Idea is that.
Okay.
So we're going to pull the God.
Right.
Okay.
And
I wasn't
so then
sure.
The motion at the appropriate time on approval of the consent agenda would still be as amended,
yeah.
Both with respect to the changes that Ms. Cassiola identified as well as Director Lapolo.
Yeah, so we have an addition. So if someone wants to make the motion up.
Public comment?
We did.
I make a motion we approve the consent agenda as amended.
Second.
Okay, let's have a roll call, please.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Replogle?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
President Austin?
Yes. Okay, that moves us on to our business items. So we'll take item 9A, the appointment of Will Clemens as general manager. Discuss and determine compensation and fringe benefits, and approve employment contract. So, I should ask for public comment on 9A.
It's your prerogative to ask for public comment ahead
of
time.
Is there any public comment on item 9A?
Actually, you know what? I'm sorry, President Austin. Because compensation is part of 9A, your board may want to have a discussion on compensation prior to taking public comment, because final compensation must be determined in
okay.
The session. Sorry.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and discuss 9A before we take public comment afterwards.
Okay. President Austin, directors of the board, before you is a contract along with the resume of Mr. Will Clemens. Your board is aware, but for the benefit of the public, your current general manager, Pavel Ogren, has announced his retirement earlier this year. His last day will be the December 21st of December of 2019. Earlier this year, your board went out for an active open recruitment. Approximately 18 resumes and applications were received by the board, and through the process of an ad hoc committee of the board, this total number was whittled down to what were determined to be the top three candidates. The board conducted interviews of the top three candidates and determined that Mr. Clemens was the best-suited candidate to be the for consideration of the role as general manager. So before you today are several items. The first one, then, of course, is the appointment of Mr. Clemens as district general manager. Now, to be clear on the second item, which is the recommendation, is related to compensation. Following the City of Bell scandal from several years ago, there had been a number of changes over time. Most recent changes in the code being in 2017, requiring that compensation of general of executive officers, in this case your general manager, must be determined in open session at a regular meeting, and so that affords the opportunity for members of the public to comment, weigh in, and understand compensation and fringe benefits of the executive officer of this agency. The proposed compensation for Mr. Clemens following my negotiations with him is $170,000 annually, 4 weeks vacation, 1 day per month accrued sick leave, and 5 administrative days. None of these veer greatly from the fringe benefits currently offered to your general manager. However, the salary is different in that Mr. Clemens' starting salary is for $170,000, subject to annual COLA cost of living adjustments. Assuming your board discusses and determines and agrees on compensation and agrees on the appointment of Mr. Clemens, then the final action would be to approve the attached employment agreement of Mr. Clemens, which is attached to your agenda package. And if you'd like to take all three of those at once, of course, your board could simply approve the attached employment agreement employment agreement as attached to the agenda, and otherwise approve the staff recommendation for the appointment of Mr. Clemens. With that, I'll hand it over to President Austin.
Okay, so do we want to take it all at once, or do you want to break it down? So you say we would discuss the appointment?
I think you have to probably do it all at
once. Yeah. Appointment. So is there any discussion on the compensation and the fringe benefit package?
I had a question and a few comments on the contract. In Section 4 term, what is a so-called Skelly hearing?
Yes.
So public employees have the right upon a discipline of any kind to have what's called a Skelly hearing. And that is a process, generally it's for represented employees like union employees. So before any adverse employment action, termination, demotion, or otherwise, the employee is entitled to have a Skelly hearing named after the Mr. Skelly when this started. And it basically gives a right to be heard and a right to be represented during that hearing. So it's actually more like a Skelly meeting, but it's so that adverse employment action cannot be taken. Now, executive officer might, like Mr. Clemens, where he's directly contracting directly to your board, will not fall into the right to have those types. He is an at-will employee. He can be hired and fired at the board's discretion for various reasons, with or without cause, but he does not have the same public property right to employment that other public employees have. And so that this just clarifies that he does not have any Skelly rights.
Thank you.
Anyone else have any questions or comments?
Hold on, I'm scrolling. But Section 10 under performance review, I had noticed that in Mr. Ogren's current contract there was a provision for a six-month review as well, and this is just every year. A six-month review seems like kind of a good idea to me, because then we can all make sure that everybody's on the same page after an initial period to kind of get things started. So I don't know what the rest of the board thinks about that.
The first review, 6 months, and then yearly after? Is that, or every 6 months?
Yeah, annually, but then additionally one at 6 months.
Anyone else want
to? President Austin, I may be able to just provide a little color.
Okay.
I was there at the time when Mr. Ogren entered that contract, and the reason for the six-month annual review is because of the situation that your district was in at the time. There was enough turmoil and enough past managers' turnover that the purpose of the six-month review was really just a check-in to make sure that things were getting on track and remaining on track. Of course, it's up to your board's discretion to add such a term in here, but I would say that for the most part, I do not see 6 months. That's unusual to have one at 6 months. Usually they're done annually, but of course that's up to your board's discretion.
Well, I would think we would leave it annually, but don't we have the opportunity if say we wanted to call for a review, we could, right, at any time?
Yes, you could, of course.
So.
Okay.
So that would work, too, if you felt like you needed to, but leave it as it is, annually.
And then in Section 11, under D1, the four cause reasons for dismissal, there's misfeasance in B and malfeasance in C. And I'm familiar with malfeasance, but I actually had to look up misfeasance. That's not really a common word. I was wondering if we could just define those two in more understandable terms for the average person.
Do you have a suggestion based on your Google definition of misfeasance?
Misfeasance, it says, is the willful, inappropriate action or intentional incorrect action or advice. Malfeasance is the willful and intentional action that injures a party. But I'm sure there's other dictionary definitions. It's just nonfeasance, which is the failure to act where action is required. That is spelled out in more common language, which would be like E, I guess. So it's just a suggestion to make the contract a little more clear for anybody reading it. I don't know about you all. Maybe you all knew what misfeasance was.
Well, yeah, I think, yeah. Misfeasance is not as bad as malfeasance, but it's the same thing. One you do more intensely than the other is what I...
One's malicious, one's mischievous.
Yeah. That's what I
thought. I don't think there's any mischief in there, but
I don't know what they mean.
I like it when contracts are in plain language so everybody who reads it can understand it. That's all I'm saying.
So when I looked at this, misfeasance to me seemed like it was something willfully done wrong. Malfeasance was failure to do something that needs to be done.
No, malfeasance is willful and intentional action.
And
so, see, you were even confused about
misfeasance.
I'm confused
now. Now I don't know.
Yeah.
How would you like to proceed?
I would just suggest that we replace those with the standard dictionary definitions of those two words.
Well, if they mean so, I'm not just...
It's the standard dictionary. We can just look it up. Yeah, you need to...
Mischievous.
Right. Okay.
Does Black's Law Dictionary have a particular definition that we could use?
Well, I think we should define it now. If we said misfeasance, general manager's misfeasance, or the willful, inappropriate action or intentional, incorrect conduct?
Boy, that's clear as mud.
Is that okay?
Okay.
Did you get that, Carrie?
It's recorded.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Okay. And malfeasance is the willful failure or omission to do something that is necessary for the benefit of the district.
Say that again.
Yes.
That's the primary.
Yes. Second is a failure or omission. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. What would I do without a Google on a phone?
And then in Section 16, General Provisions, in E, and I think elsewhere in here, it's talking about bringing an action in court if there's a disagreement over the contract. I was wondering if we could add in a provision for mediation before we, you know, some kind of alternative dispute resolution mechanism before it would go directly to court. What does the rest of the board think? Sometimes I found this for myself in a small claims court, that just sitting down to mediate with the other party, we worked things out and didn't actually have to go to the judge, which is costly.
I just don't know if this, would that be something, this kind of a contract with mediation, or do you want to?
Well, the trick is with something like this, is that if there's a breach of the contract, usually what will have happened is that it would be a termination or some action by your board to termination, demotion, anything similar. There can't be a demotion, I suppose, but it would be an adverse employment action of some kind by your board that would generally end the employment. And so what would happen here is that in reality, that there would be no more employment, and any action regarding this would be a post-employment action. And so I don't know if your board wants to be forced into a mediation with a former employee. I do know, as a matter of course, if anything reached a civil action like that, the judge does recommend you go to mediation right away anyway. So,
Is that a standard thing that they do now?
There is. It's standard for the judge to ask you to go to mediation, but I just can't see that I can't see a situation where things got so bad between the board and the general manager where mediation was necessary because ultimately your board has the right.
It would be too late.
Yeah.
Okay.
There'd be no way to, there's no hope at that point. And that's true, and even in the first 4 years, your liability would be limited to 6 months severance anyway. So,
okay, thank you. That's all I had.
Okay. I don't have any questions. I'm ready to move towards appointment.
You making the motion?
I want to hear what other people have to say.
We have to have public comment.
Yeah.
Right.
And I did want to mention one thing, which is $170,000 seems like a lot of money to many people, but I took the data from what general managers, people in similar positions in the county, are making and calculated the average and the median, and even excluding Pablo's salary, which is very high, the average and median are in the low 150s. So this is not that far away from the average numbers.
Okay. Do you need public comment now?
Well, does your board want to provide Mr. Clemens with an opportunity to say a few words?
Would Mr. Clemens like to come up and or make a public
comment? Mr. Clemens.
The speaker slip.
Good
President Austin, members of the board, Will Clemens, and first I have to say that I'm humbled to be considered for this position, very honored, should you choose to approve it. I brought my family with me because we come as a package. This is my household, my beautiful wife, Danielle, of 20 years, my daughter, Brooklyn, and younger daughter, Sonora, and Grandpa, who likes to tell everybody that he turned 98 this year.
Oh.
I'm excited to get to work for this district. I'm excited that this district values experience, and I think that's very critical, dealing with the importance of the services that you provide, especially clean drinking water for citizens. That shouldn't be taken for granted, that every time we turn the tap on, we get clean drinking water. So I'm excited to get to work for the district, and I look forward to putting my experience to work for the community of Oceano. And my goal, as always, I believe I've done it at the county for 20 years, is I've brought more value to the community than I take from it, and that's my goal here in Oceano as well. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Okay, is there any other public comment? I think we had a speaker slip from Mr. Eugene Flores.
Thank you. Good evening, board members, staff, Oceano Community Services District. Thank you for this opportunity to speak on item 9A. Overall, I want to commend the board and the staff for the information provided about this endeavor that you're about to take. And at the same time, I thank the current general manager for his services. Overall, I commend the board for the information provided in your description of the duties and responsibilities of the general manager, so that anyone understands what those duties are and the responsibilities are. That's very helpful. I also commend the board for providing, while I realize it's legally required, but you provide the full contract with all of the duties, responsibilities, compensation, and other issues. I do have one concern, and it was just most recently raised by the one of the board members, in that, you know, legendary actor and comedian W.C. Fields is often quoted as saying, all things being relative, I'd rather be in Philadelphia, and the key word being relative. So while this compensation may be appropriate, it was not informative in terms of relative compensations for other types of positions in this community, in this county, in similar services, until you raised some general commentary just recently. So for most people in this community, as you know probably better than I, whose medium income is probably around $50,000, that might seem exorbitant. And I don't want the salary of the next general manager to be confused with your next item coming up about the future tax issue, that someone confuses the two, thinking this is why we have to raise taxes, is to pay for salaries. So just a recommendation that in the future there's a little more in the analysis presented in the item, so that there is some relativity, so that the general public can have an understanding of how this fits in, including in costs and operations. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just a little bit of follow-up. I think those comments are really good comments, and that the for us to pay attention to. During the normal course of work, it's often that, you know, we get on a roll, we do analysis, whether it's staff or the board, and we came up with an understanding of what seems reasonable. And it's good to have members of the public to provide that outside perspective. I think that with reference to Director Raplogo's question earlier about the breakout on the Facebook page,
trying to work some history in there about the general manager position and what the efforts have been of the district over the last several years, and including the hiring of Mr. Clemens, would be, again, some additional education that would be noteworthy, because the strategy and leadership for the district for the last, you know, really five-plus years is to make sure to bring in a general manager who not only can do the day-to-day general manager routines, but bring some additional value to the job. And some of that has created cost savings for the district in terms of not hiring Prop 218 consultants or some other consultants, and trying to establish more institutional knowledge within the district, as opposed to relying on consultants who will do some work and then, you know, go on to their next client and everything. So I think the comments are very well taken, and I think that we can help address that in some of the upcoming public outreach efforts.
I think it's very important to address the institutional knowledge, like you said, and that the need, sure, you have the 150 to 165 or 175, the lower, but, you know, I always said you get what you pay for, and with Mr. Clemens, there's so many things at the lower we have to hire consultants to do, whereas he has that knowledge to do, so we actually save money by not having to have consultants come in when we have somebody in there that can do the job. Like when we hired you, that's what we needed you at that time, and that's worked out for the best, and I have all the confidence this is going to be a very good continuation of what you were able to do here. Keep us going. Good. So after that, is there any other public comment on this item? Do we have anyone want to make a motion?
A motion that we approve the employment of Will Clemens as Oceano's general manager, and its compensation of $170,000 a year, four-week vacation, fringe benefits. Not sure what they are, but as in the contract.
Second.
Madam, I'm assuming that might include, but to probably be clear, the clarifications of the definitions of both malfeasance and misfeasance as described by legal counsel?
So moved. Seconded, yeah. Yes.
As a minute. So we have a motion and a second. Can we have a roll call, please?
Director Villa?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Plogle?
Yes.
President Austin?
Yes. Okay, congratulations, Mr. President.
I promise no decency of any kind.
I still have my camera. Picture time?
Picture
sure.
time.
Let's have a... Don't you want to be...
You'd be running out.
Shall we stand up?
Yeah.
Stand up?
Oh, can we stand up? I'll try.
My only remark is, after 6 months, I'm sure I will be long forgotten.
Oh, no. We'll never forget you.
We'll all be over to your house for barbecue.
Okay, that'll bring us to 9B. This will be the introduction of the draft resolutions for placing a measure on the ballot for the March 3rd, 2020 consolidated election for voters within district boundaries to decide whether to approve an ordinance establishing a special tax for emergency medical and fire protection services pursuant to California Constitution Article 13, yeah, and to set a public hearing for October 23rd, 2019 to adopt the final resolution.
So, Madam President, members of the board, I've handed out a short outline on the discussion today. The first thing I want to mention is that there is no required action. As I've traditionally done on issues, it's preview, review, and act. And we've certainly had a lot of previews of this topic over the last couple years, year and a half or so. And so this is sort of the final review, and it's really the public hearing on October 23rd that your board needs to take action. And you do need to take action on October 23rd as a result of the amended joint powers authority with the cities of Rio Grande and Grover Beach, and because the clerk's schedule, in order to have an actual item on the March 3rd, 2020 election, that they had originally set a schedule of October 22nd, and legal counsel twisted their arm a little bit and got us a couple extra days. The issues really for discussion today is the discussion of ballot options, a flat tax versus a formula-based tax, a formula based somewhat on land use, discussion of the tax amounts, discussion of the ballot language and how that relationship to the survey results, a potential presentation of a survey at some point in time. And I'm generally inclined that if your board wants a bigger presentation of the survey, that it be done as part of a town hall meeting where we really solicit and get good community participation, a town hall meeting specifically focused on, you know, the fire tax, the tax for emergency medical and fire protection services, because we've definitely been focusing on emergency medical, and then discussion of public outreach and frequently asked questions. And on that last point, our ad hoc committee might have a couple of comments, but we have a lot of questions there. We're going to be having draft responses for the next agenda item, but it might also be advisable to talk a little bit about reducing the number of questions because there is a lot there. So with respect to discussion on the ballot options, and again, as a point of clarification, there's a resolution and an ordinance associated with both approaches. It's only the resolution that your board adopts. I actually had a public inquiry on this particular point. Your board doesn't adopt the ordinance. That's what the voters either would approve or not approve. The importance of just recognizing that is that it's when your board adopts an ordinance, it requires two readings, has to be introduced at one meeting, and there can't be substantial changes, and then it has to be acted on at a subsequent meeting, which is the process that IWMA just went through in adopting the regulation, the ordinance regulating polystyrene. They introduced it in the September meeting and acted on it in their October meeting. But your board is actually only acting on the resolution itself, which means that you can give us direction today, but you can also modify the resolution on October 23rd. So that way there's time to both talk today as well as making final determinations at the next meeting. In general, regarding a flat tax versus a formula tax, what we see is that the flat tax at $180 per parcel, regardless of how that parcel is used, and then some properties are exempt. We can't charge federal state agencies. But that would have all parcels paying the same amount. Total revenues that would be generated would be up to $421,000. And I say up to $421,000 because I'm going to assume that some parcels will be deemed to be non-taxable. My basic range is $400,000 to $421,000 is where I would think we would sit at the end of the day. And the attachment says, you know, has to clarify or subject to, you know, those are estimates. The other option, which is to tax individual parcels based on their current land use, is a formula that is driven on and shown on page, I think it's 65 of 69. And in a prior meeting, quite some time ago, We shared the formulas that were used in Los Osos as well as the formula used in Cayucas. And we try to take those two formulas to match Oceano better than how the formulas matched either Los Osos or Cayucas. The formulaic approach to the tax is something that would generate about $40,000 more a year in revenue instead of $421,000, about $461,000. I'm going to slow down for a second and just check to see whether or not I had mentioned page 65, but I don't know if any of the board members want me to slow down so that we can get to references. Just raise your hand.
It's on. It's separate.
It's this loose page.
That page.
Yeah.
It was in the hand. Yeah. Okay. Here we go. That's why I didn't see it. Okay.
Yeah. And when I think about the two approaches, on the one hand, I look at a land use based approach, and I think that there's a bit more equity involved in that. I look at a flat tax approach, and certainly it's more straightforward. And to really judge the value of which is the better way to go or not is board discretion. From our review, it's much more common that we see flat taxes proposed than formula-based taxes. I think in part that's easier to understand. But we're also reflecting on the Templeton's recent vote. So there's a certain amount of coincidence that the dollar amount is the same at $180 per parcel. But Templeton did do the flat tax approach. And there's a part of me that's concerned that deviating from that may cause more questions and more challenges associated with the election. The flat tax approach will also generate a lesser amount than the formula-based tax approach. And I think that, having as sharp a pencil as possible and keeping the tax amount in total as low as possible is indicating, the realistic concern about affordability issues in the community. So I'm generally inclined to recommend the flat tax approach, even though it generates less money overall. I think that the other side of reflecting on that is that when we come to water and sewer rates, your board is prohibited under Prop 218 from providing discounts to low-income individuals unless you use the property taxes to pay for those discounts. And, of course, property taxes are primarily dedicated to fire and emergency services. In the special tax, you do have the ability to consider a broader rate of issues, including affordability, in setting a special tax. And the flat tax essentially does help give a break to people, that are in multifamily situations or mobile home parks in many situations. So collecting $40,000 a year less in revenues, or roughly 10% of the proposal, that benefit is going to primarily accrue to multifamily housing. Either approach as proposed would be the same for single-family dwelling units. Now, the question that could come, that it's sort of the obvious, well, why not do the formula approach, but for the lower dollar amount of $421,000? And what that would do is it would change the proposal for a single-family home from $180 to $175. So there's really wouldn't be much of a swing for single-family homes in that situation. But again, the flat tax approach does have benefit for some of the lower-income individuals in the community and those who are living in multifamily housing. The question, obviously, of whether landlords are going to pass those costs on to tenants or not is always going to be answered on a case-by-case basis, based on the landlord-tenant relationship and nothing that your board does. But I wanted to sort of give a flavor of those two ballot options in terms of flat tax versus formula tax. And then moving into the actual tax amounts and how we came up with those, I thought I would pause to see if the board had questions or discussion on that particular.
Does anyone have anything they want to ask about the difference between the flat tax and the other benefit?
Not specifically on that. I was wondering where the 2% per year increase comes from. Is that set by statute or?
No, it's not set by statute, and
our thoughts are basically that as a tax itself, Proposition 13 limits increases in property taxes to 2% per year. And so the thought was to be consistent with Prop 13.
Because I noticed on this one handout, it starts going into the red after 2021 with the flat tax and a 2% increase.
Yeah, so I was going to hit on that under the next item, which
sorry,
is a discussion.
I'm jumping ahead.
That's okay, yeah.
So you're saying it caps at 2%, can't go over, but can you not even do it 2%?
That is true. That would be your board's discretion. My recommendation, if I was here at the time, would be that every year your board adopts like a resolution that establishes the new maximum threshold, which is 2% above what the prior year's was. And then you take separate action as to what you might deem necessary to collect that particular year, which could be at a lesser amount. That way you're always establishing a maximum authorized amount with the 2% increases, but your discretion on an annual basis could actually impose a tax of a lesser amount. You just can't impose a tax greater than the maximum amount approved by voters. Napomo Community Services District, for example, has done that in the past under franchise fees, where garbage franchise fees, I don't know what their percentage is. Ours is 10% of gross revenues, and they have in the past decided on a one-year basis to only charge something lesser than the maximum amount. And on franchise fees, your board certainly can consider that as well.
I think it makes sense to do the 2% because, like, a couple of years it does get to be costs are going to go up. We might as well put it in now than not wish we had.
Right. So, again, it establishes that the maximum that your board can
Templeton
do.
Templeton had that in, didn't they? 2%.
Yes. And there's some agencies we researched that did cost of living adjustments that would be capped at higher amounts, higher percentages. But all things considered for Oceano, again, tying it back to Proposition 13 is with a 2% maximum is really what our recommendation is.
Can you also address how the special tax can be repealed by the voters?
Takes a referendum, but it's pretty clear in these provisions of Prop 13, Prop 218, that voters have the right to repeal.
Right, so they have control.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
When we get to the actual discussion of the ballot language, there's also a provision in there as well as in the measures regarding a citizens' oversight committee. Which I think is a prudent action to public trust and making sure money is well spent and options are being vetted appropriately. But that's in addition to the voters' right to repeal, the Citizens Oversight Committee is another measure to improve both transparency and accountability.
Okay, so what we want to do now is discuss, do we want to do the, which one?
Well, no, you don't have. I just wanted to make sure that I paused to provide the board with an opportunity to ask questions about the two approaches. But after we get through, the different topics, then a total board discussion on all elements.
Okay.
So, with regard to the tax amounts themselves, let's see. I want to flip to. Page 40 of the agenda. And the page 40 is the one that has a big spreadsheet on it. It's this big spreadsheet. Yeah, the one with a lot of numbers on it.
Yeah. Okay.
The primary driver, of course, in terms of costs, is the Joint Powers Authority agreement with the City of Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach. And this particular spreadsheet on a multi-year basis illustrates a number of different things. One is it illustrates the cost estimates incorporated into the Five Cities Fire Authority strategic plan. It also represents the funding formulas that were approved in the recent amendments to the Joint Powers Authority Agreement.
And through all those calculations, then, we see what Oceano's costs are associated with the Five Cities Fire Authority. At the very bottom, those all are shown in the line item that says FCFA 5-year strategic budget costs. So above those lines, we identify what are the total property taxes for the fire fund, two components, what's our estimate of net property taxes that we're going to have available, and then what's the flat tax estimate. In terms of how we got to the net property taxes that are available, that's the handout that's included, was provided to all your board members, and it's on the, yes, it's that one that looks, and essentially what it is, it's our estimate of general fund revenues, property taxes, minus the annual costs associated with the lighting fund, and minus our OCSD costs associated with the fire fund. And so those are the net property taxes available for Five Cities Fire Authority. There's some minor dollar amount differences between the estimates of net available and what we show on this other worksheet. Carrie just recently updated this other one, but we're talking about, again, hundreds of dollars, and those estimates are going to vary more than that. So in essence, again, the net property taxes available are our total estimates minus the amount budgeted for the lighting fund and minus the amount that's budgeted for our own costs associated with Five Cities Fire Authority. And so then when we take the $180 per parcel, as Director Replogle had identified, onto a flat tax approach, for next fiscal year, we're estimating a surplus of about $42,000. And then in 21-22 and 22-23, as Five Cities Fire costs ramp up, we see ourselves looking at a deficit of about $19,000 and $28,000. And over the three-year period, those are pretty much balanced. But where our comfort is that in 2022-23, right now the general fund is paying $113,000 a year to repay the interfund loan for the sewer fund. And so that interfund loan is going to be paid off, which means that the rental revenues from the sheriff's substation of about $115,000 a year right now are going to kick in. There's a certain assumption that the sheriff is going to want to stay at the Oceano substation. If that were not to happen, then we would have to find other renters. But the sheriff has been expressive in past meetings that he intends on staying, and I think that can be fully anticipated.
Oh, I'm sorry, what year was that's paid off?
The last year of payments, I believe, is 2022-23, and even in that year, it's a partial payment, not the full $115,000. Unforeseen contingencies or other issues that could come up, your board could take the repayment of this funding of the loan to the sewer fund and stretch it out over a couple of years. Take the $113,000, $115,000 a year right now, drop that amount, and stretch it over a couple more years if necessary. I don't see that as being necessary. What I think really happens is that when that gets repaid, then that is those lease revenues coming in are going to cover the contingencies. To me, the bigger question is, well, what happens in the future if the cities decide that they want to increase levels of services or implement other measures in the strategic plan above and beyond what the fire authority has already targeted? And that's a condition that can exist under any situation that, you know, in some ways, Oceano is in the position that we're in right now because the cities decided that they wanted to upgrade services. If that happens again in the future, my comfort is that if this special tax is passed, then the total funding available for fire department operations is going to be around $1.5 million. The analysis that the county did in its strategic plan indicated that running a fire department costs about $1.5 million. Basically, it gets two full shifts of engineers and firefighters 24/7. It gets you a fire chief. It will provide some additional staffing to help with vacations or sick leave time. This tax measure would provide the ability for OCSD to fund its own fire department. And I think that's important because it really would provide, you know, it provides the ability to ensure on a long-term basis that Oceano can fund a fire department. In comparison, the county's strategic plan had indicated about $1.55 million. That's where we would be at in 3 years. So for all practical purposes, I think that it's not just the issue of trying to identify what's it going to take in order to continue to participate in Five Cities Fire Authority, but also what's the dollar amount that's necessary so that the district isn't, that Oceano is not necessarily tied to anybody else, that it can be, you know, Oceano can stand on its own 2 feet. I think that that's important because, again, in whatever the future might hold for the district, if there was a desire in the future to, or a need to ask for more money, well, if that second request didn't pass, which was what happened in Cayucas a couple years ago, Cayucas passed their first special tax. They did not pass their second special tax. They could not feasibly move forward. But this first special tax would provide feasibility for Oceano to move forward in the future on its own and provide that independence. I also think that that's a good point because clearly we've sharpened the pencil about as close as we can in coming up with this 180. In the county's strategic plan, they had estimated about $205 per parcel per year. So I think that this proposal indicates that, you know, Oceano really is conscientious about the fiscal situation of many people within the community, and trying to keep that pencil as sharp as possible, I think, is important, while also being able to assure the ability to operate a fire department on its own if the future holds that for the community. So that, you know, there's many things that you weigh in coming up with a dollar amount. You know, as a person who grew up in the fiscal environment, you know, you want to be more conservative and make sure you have a lot of buffer. But I really have a hard time, you know, putting out that $205 a year number that the county had. The assumptions are a little bit different. They had also, we're looking at generating $500,000 per year. And I think we're targeting more of something just over $400,000 per year. I did have another question from a member of the public who said that this was the first meeting that they've seen the dollar amount proposed. And that's correct. This is the first time that we're proposing the specific dollar amount. So, again, if your board wants us to consider other issues and bring back, you know, more justification at the next meeting, we can do so. But one of the reasons why is that in working with Godby on the survey, they really encouraged us to not put out a dollar amount early because it could jeopardize the survey results. The idea of what is the community's thinking without having any background knowledge of what the district might be proposing, just kind of that blank slate survey. I also think that it's kind of coincidental, but again, $180 per parcel on a flat tax was recently approved in Templeton. You know, that's obviously not going to be an indication of whether it's going to pass necessarily in Oceano, but consistency tends to ring a bell in the public's mind a little bit. So I think that there's, you know, sort of that's a qualitative type of a statement rather than a quantitative statement. So again, I want to pause a little bit and provide the board with the opportunity to ask questions about the $180 per parcel per year.
I think it's the right amount after when we look at what it brings in.
Well,
420. I don't think 205 would not be received at all. I don't think 180. I think people can deal with.
Well, I think we meet our obligation without excess. I mean, we're not...
Just to meet, yeah.
We're just... The whole focus is to meet our obligation, but not to get wealthy here.
Right.
And I think it, you know, $15 a month. I keep looking at it as $15 a month, not $180 a year, mm-hmm. as a fixed income person. So I see it from that point. You know, where do I pick up $15 a month? And it's easier for me to think of it that way. But I think it'll cover the cost, and I think it'll provide for alternatives in the future, because it's not too many years before we're at a spot where we could put it on fire department. We might be able to limp through until that point if that's what we had to do too.
We have great offices, like you said, that come up with money by doing it. I think the flat tax is where I'm kind of leaning.
Coming from Halcyon, Halcyon would have a great advantage of having the other kind of tax, not the flat tax, the formula tax, because they have so much open land. They're one of the areas that probably does have a lot of open land. But I'm not going to support that, because I think, and maybe I'm just talking off the top of my head, but open land has as much potential for fire as a residence, a home, you know, and that 2 or 3 acres of eucalyptus that is in Halcyon doesn't have a smoke alarm. So, I mean, I think it balances, the 180 balances that, you know, different kinds of threats, but it balances.
I'm leaning toward the flat tax, but I would like to see some input from the community. And so maybe we don't choose either tonight. We just get more information and see what the public has to say.
I agree. Yeah.
Wonder if there's any.
Were you going to talk about the schedule of benefits and how you came up with the land use?
Sure.
Benefit numbers.
So that is on again page 65. And what the schedule of benefits does is it identifies a whole bunch of land use categories, and those land use categories are driven based on land use codes. We obtained a download from the county's assessor on all the parcels in Oceano and all the land use codes. And one of the first things that I want to really clarify with regard to this schedule of benefits is that when it comes to a special tax, there's not the nexus analysis that's required like in assessment districts, where you have to get an assessment engineer to go about and do an analysis on the nexus of assessment benefits. So this schedule of benefits has no relationship to what are called general benefits or special benefits under assessment proceedings, because we're not talking about an assessment. Nor is there the requirement to do cost of service analysis associated with property-related fees and charges. That essentially a public agency, and your board, has a relatively broader discretion of establishing a benefit analysis under a special tax. And the logic behind that, I think, is simply you have also a higher bar for approval. It requires 2/3 voter approval. So you have greater discretion in establishing benefits, but there's a higher threshold to obtain voter approval. The contrast is on assessments or special benefits, where an engineer is doing a nexus analysis. It's a vote of property owners, and you have to get 50% plus one in proportion to the assessments. But a special tax, you have to get 2/3 voter approval. So again, that point is all about having a rational formula, but not being tied to a strict nexus analysis like other revenue mechanisms. So as I mentioned earlier, we looked at both the Los Osos schedule of benefits as well as the Cayuca schedule of benefits. And we saw a lot of consistency on things like single-family dwelling units or seconds. Where we found inconsistencies is when we start getting into the details of non-residential types of properties, whether it's restaurants or delicatessens or vacant lot. And we did the best as we could to try to take both the Cayucas and Los Osos formulas and tailor them to Oceano. When it comes to the single-family dwelling unit, it's 5 units. The ordinance says $36 per unit, so that's how we come up with $180 per year. Properties that have multiple dwelling units on it, what we see is that like the secondary dwelling units are charged at a lesser amount. Duplexes and triplexes are 4 units per dwelling unit. So in the formula, if you have multifamily housing, you pay less per benefit unit, but you have more multifamilies. So if you have a 4-unit apartment complex, it's 3 units per dwelling unit, which means you're going to be paying 12 units altogether as compared to 5 for a single-family dwelling. And so an apartment with 4 is going to pay more than double of a single-family home. So, again, with our lower income tending to live in the higher density of development, the flat tax ends up, you know, giving somewhat of a break for the high-density development. You know, part of our concern about the formulaic approach, too, is the administration of it. Because every year requires updates, and we see some that are on commercial manufacturing storage. It's based on square footage. What we would envision doing underneath the formulaic approach is sending every single property owner our determination of what we think the application is to their unit and seeking their feedback. And so that we would be going through a process of confirmation, right, where we're saying, hey, property owner, our evaluation, the information that we have is that you have 1,500 square feet of commercial space. You know, is that correct or not? Please provide us some feedback. Yeah, so while it's a valid approach that's certainly within the discretion of your board, the point there is that it is much more administratively extensive, and itself will end up, you know, driving up some of our costs and time.
You have to have somebody actually, just one person do that job probably for a while, right?
Well, it takes. In 1988, that was my job on the Los Osos fire tax, and yes, it takes time. Questions so or thoughts?
Was there any nexus assessment done on this, like comparing how many calls for service there are from different types of land uses?
No. Again, we were...
Because I think I had suggested that the last time we were discussing this as a board. Because to me, as a resident, it makes sense to me that if a certain type of business or type of residence has a lot more calls, then they should get a higher assessment than somebody who doesn't get a lot of calls.
And a couple of challenges. So what we did do is I was spent a lot of time on the internet to find anything I could find regarding fiscal analysis to support this. I was also at one of the CIA, California Special Districts Association conferences recently, where there was an attorney speaking on you know, different forms of revenues under Prop 218. And so I peppered him with as many questions as I possibly could. Just did not find, out of all these different tax measures, any good guidance on how to do that nexus analysis. And so, again, under Prop 218, when we're talking about provisions associated with rates and charges for property-related fees like water rates and wastewater rates, or when it comes to assessment districts, there's a lot of guidance out there on how to do those evaluations. But we would simply be trying to create the wheel here.
I thought you were going to sit down with Chief Lieberman and talk about that generally. No?
Yeah, and so we've had discussions, and that kind of brought in the second part, which is, all right, how much of this is really attributed to emergency and medical services versus how much is attributed to a fire? because they pose different kind of risks, and how do you even proportion between the two? So lacking any real good guidance to follow, I just wasn't able to come up with, you know, an analysis. And looking at what some of the other local communities did seemed to be the best comparisons that we could develop. Again, that all sort of points to challenges associated with the formula approach and why it's not surprising that most of the taxes that we've looked at have taken the flat tax approach.
Yeah, this schedule seems to me needlessly complex as well as having a lot of holes in it. For instance, hotel bed and breakfast, does that include VRBOs? Because we have a lot of VRBOs, especially right down by the beach. Or is that considered, if they're renting the whole house, is that considered a residential single-family dwelling?
So then,
if I'm renting out one room in my house for a Airbnb, then do I get assessed another three units? Or
so furthermore, I agree, because the basic administrative challenges are one thing, and then the interpretation of the ordinance is going to bring in a whole lot of case examples as well of, well, what do we do about this and that and the other thing? So
I don't see a slot for our coffee shop in here or where the melodrama falls.
Right. So we see things like delicatessens or restaurants. We see commercial. So, again, this would be a matter of either taking every single property and trying to establish to make sure it's in a specific land use category, which, again, is really extensive administratively, or we're in an interpretation process, which could be subject to appeals to your board and, you know, a lot more. And it really starts to question the wisdom of taking the formulaic approach, even though it's one of your options.
Or it could be simplified down to just a handful of categories. Residential, commercial, industrial, mixed use.
It could be, and then you start getting into additional interpretation there on how do you do that, and is there equity between the different non-residential customers? Because if you take all these non-residential and try to simplify the number of categories, then you get non-residential who say, I shouldn't be in that category, or the category you put me in doesn't make sense. Further kind of, again, illustrating the complexity of trying to take the formula approach.
Could it follow the county zoning? We could have benefit categories based on the county zoning of the land.
We're still going to get into the same question of equity. But generally speaking, your board does have great discretion looking at actual land uses as opposed to zoning. Is much more common. Even when we look at assessment districts where the nexus analysis is required, it's much more common to look at existing land use. If somebody changes land use, then they can, the application of the formula is going to differ. The other thing that happens in assessment districts sometimes, because those are set dollar amounts, is that if somebody changes land use, then there can be a supplemental assessment incorporated in there for changing land uses. That's pretty common in assessment districts, but again, in special taxes, not so much.
I understand that. I'm just trying to find a way to make it seem a little more equitable than just everybody pays the same amount and at the same time simplify it so it's not an administrative headache.
But if you end up with more people protesting what the district thinks, then, you know, just complicates.
Well, and yeah. I have another thing, because I don't think there's always you were talking about nexus with so much of our calls medical, say 80% of our medical. I pay my $180 for my private home, but I have a medical problem at the restaurant, so I've already paid for mine. I mean, and why is the restaurant having to pay for me? I mean, if you want to look at it out the window, at the top, I think the only way to go is a straight system where...
Yeah, and...
The restaurant, it's you that's being protected at the restaurant, so why is the restaurant paying more? It's not you know, because so much of it is medical, not fire. We have to look at the medical as the primary act that the Five Cities Fire Authority provides, not fire. So you have to look at it from that standpoint, which is the critical need.
There may be more calls for medical service, but the fire could be a much higher dollar amount. I mean, there's differences. There's apples and oranges.
It's not complicated.
I think this is all extremely valid discussion. I mean, these are the types of things that an elected body, such as your board, is doing a good job in talking about them. I think that when I reflect on the different types of services that government provides and the different types of revenue mechanisms that exist, when it comes to providing water service or sewer service or building some infrastructure, that's one thing because those are specific community assets. When it comes to general governmental services like fire service or police protection services or other health and human services, that nexus analysis is really a lot harder to really be able to get down to because you could have, you know, a family living in a single family home that calls a fire department or police department zero times in 20 years, right? But when it comes to water and sewer service, we know that they're going to get water every single day, right? So being able to do nexus analysis in the infrastructure and those water and sewer services, again, a lot of precedent out there, a lot of good guidance out there. But when it comes to general governmental services, the really ability to develop this perfect formula or something that's fair and it's not administratively burdensome, is, you know, ultimately at the end of the day a pretty big challenge, and it really comes down to your board's discretion. Again, under Prop 218 and the laws, you have a fair amount of discretion here because you got to get 2/3 voters to approve it. But you're discussing the very things that, you know, create challenges, especially in the formulaic approach.
Another question. So if we chose the land use tax, are all residents going to get a postcard or something saying what we think?
Yes.
Okay. And then at that point they could protest or?
Well, there's no, so this, there's not a protest provision. Well, it's simply, you know, it would be on the March 2020 ballot. When you go to place it on the tax roll every year, they could come in and disagree with your board as to the application of the tax to their particular property. But that's not really a protest on the vote. That's just them pleading to your board saying that, hey, we think that the ordinance applied to our property should be interpreted differently.
Was there something in the survey that addressed which scheme people, the 157 people who were surveyed, preferred?
Not within the margin of errors. There's some, after the surveyor had asked, there was some indication that there's a slight preference for a formulaic-based tax, but that difference was less than the 7.5% margin of error. So there's no clear, you know, community preference on one approach versus the other.
Okay, so
where are we at now? Now a little bit about the ballot language itself, because both drafts include substantially the same language. The draft on the flat tax is on page 53, and the draft on the formula tax is on page 58. Okay. But what I want to do is go to page 53, and then we also have the handout of the Godby survey, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so we want to reflect on page 10 there. And one of the points that I want to make real quickly is that when legal counsel and his associate were working on the draft resolutions and ordinances, over the last couple weeks. And then Ms. Cassiola and I went in and sat down with them last Tuesday, and we were trying to work on the final language of the, our proposal for the ballot language. We had not seen the results of the Godbey survey yet. And yet what we came up with was actually pretty darn consistent with what the results ended up saying. So in turning to the ballot questions themselves, it says, the beginning says, to maintain rapid response times for 911 medical emergency and fire protection services. And on, let's see, I said page 10. That's not right. Page 9 of the PowerPoint on the survey results. The number one thing that the community responded to in favor was maintain rapid response for 911 medical emergencies and fire. So apparently we got that one right. And then in the measure we say provide 24 hours per day, 7 days a week, staff medical emergency and fire vehicles. And the number two thing on page 9 that the community responded to was maintain fire engine staffing 24/7. On that page 9, there are a number of other things that the community responded generally favorable to that's important for them. But in a ballot measure, we're limited to 75 words, and I just don't generally think droning on too long about why the measure is there. So we captured the first two things.
I'm sorry, what's the title of that page? Because I'm not seeing that.
You got
on page 9.
Of the measure or the PowerPoint? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. There's two parts to it. This is the summary of the survey.
Oh, second page 9.
Yeah, it's on the back of the...
Yeah.
So I was not going to get into the details of what they call the top line report, which gets into a ton of little statistics.
Okay, sorry, I'm on the right page 9 now.
Yeah, I was going to the summary results. So on that page 9 where it says Q5 features of the measure, in the actual language that we drafted, when we were drafting this last week, we did not see yet the results of the survey. But essentially, the top two items that the community responded to are the two that are included in there. Mm-hmm. And then we move into some required language in the ballot measure, which is shall they basically adopt the ordinance? And we have to specify the annual amount per parcel, $180. In the formula approach, we say it's $36 per benefit unit. We have to state what our estimate is and how much we will collect on an annual basis. And so that's the $422,000 for the flat tax on page 53. We have to state that it's subject to annual maximum increases capped at 2%. And then the recommended language on until repealed by voters is intended to really make it clear that voters do have the ability to repeal. It's preferable language over forever, because forever would even be misleading. You say this is a tax that is going to be proposed on you forever. Well, it doesn't tell the voters that they actually have the right to repeal it. And then the last language that says, and requiring independent citizen oversight and annual reports. That's something that we saw in Templeton and others that is included in the measure and the ordinance itself, which would require your board to develop an oversight committee of at least 3 individuals who come from Oceano. Good for accountability, looking at options, and transparency. On page 10, the next page of the PowerPoint from summarizing the statistical results, there's 3 things that the community responded to. One is making sure that all the money is used for fire protection, which has to be because it's a special tax. None of the money raised by the measure will be used for administrator salaries because this is all about, Five Cities Fire Authority. But it's E that says the measure requires independent citizen oversight to ensure the money is spent as promised. And that, again, ranked pretty highly in terms of the community survey.
A couple of the things that, one of the things that was included in survey questions that maybe our instincts were just on right is that hazard material responses. When we worked on the draft language last week before looking at the responses, our inclination was that, you know, even though there are hazardous materials in the community, we're not living in an industrial community. You know, we're not living in a community that has a lot of manufacturing plants or other types of activities that are going to create significant risk to hazardous materials, even though there are risks. And what the survey showed is that that's simply not on the mind of the community. The other one that was not part of the survey is the risk to wildfires. And so we know that many communities, especially in Northern California, because of some of the devastating wildfires that have, you know, affected communities because of the urban wildlife interface, that, you know, we just didn't see that type of effort as being, or that issue as being applicable here in Oceano as well, even though it is in many other communities. So I feel like the ballot measure itself, you know, provides a, you know, the basic sense, makes sense, and it makes sense in comparison to the survey results. Regarding the survey overall, when I looked at it, I just looked at it and says, you know, it's giving us the results that we should anticipate. One is it gives really high marks for the Five Cities Fire Authority. It gives lower marks, but okay marks for the district as a whole. Not great, not bad, but just sort of medium marks for Oceano CSD. Not surprisingly, again, because it tends to be that, you know, where does the public give higher marks is, you know, law enforcement, fire services, schools. Other governmental services don't generally get as high marks. There's detailed questions in here about what the district is doing that I think warrants additional public education, because the district has been doing, you know, taking efforts for improvement that in various aspects of operations that the public probably isn't really well aware of. But those are only somewhat related, you know, to the overall, to the tax measure. They're more directly related to the public's overall perception of how OCSD is doing. I think those are the types of things that can be better addressed in a town hall meeting, but I don't really see them as directly related to the ballot measure itself. And then, so again, higher marks for higher levels of confidence for Five Cities Fire Authority overall makes sense. Lower marks, but neither good nor bad, just kind of in the middle there for the district as a whole. But clearly price sensitivity. You know, the idea that what the survey says essentially is that a special tax of this magnitude is right off the offset without any public outreach. Is got about 50% support. And that, to me, is well anticipated. When we looked at fire tax elections throughout the state, we see a lot of examples where communities exceed the 50%, you know, majority threshold, but fall short of the two-thirds voter requirement for passage. And I think that if anybody had thought that, oh, two-thirds voter requirement is going to be a slam dunk, you know, that would not have been, you know, I think we all recognize that that's a big decision for the community. And as a sort of a side point, I'm going to continue to encourage your board, because you're not allowed to advocate, you know, either for or against. You have some ability to state, you know, ballot positions, arguments, and for, but we know, you know, the general rule that legal counsel told us is if you want to advocate for or against, it's on your own time and on your own dime. From the district perspective, I think it needs to be, we do the best job for the community to make a well-informed decision, and then whatever the results of the election are, we respect the community's decision on that. So the survey includes some interesting information that I think could be pertinent for outreach in a town hall meeting and other things. It also includes a lot of information that either proponents or opponents might run with in order to sway voters one way or another. But that's not, you know, really for, you know, district discussions and stuff. And then I also have the potential presentation of the survey. And again, if your board's so inclined to want to do that, I'm encouraging a town hall meeting that talks bigger about, you know, why the fire tax, Five Cities Fire, what are we doing, and what did we learn
from the survey in terms of what the community is thinking.
I think that's a good idea, and we could also get more public feedback at that time.
Yeah.
It would be a good timing to set up a town hall meeting prior to March. Would it be better?
So March 3rd is Election Day. Because so many people are now doing write-in ballots, I can't remember if they get to start voting 2 weeks before or 3 weeks before, right? But, really...
For the end of the year?
Yeah, I think we're really talking about holiday season type of town hall meeting.
Sometime in December, then?
Yeah. I guess as a general note, with the approval of Mr. Clemens' contract today, I'm going to be, discussing more with him about anything that we're going to propose to move forward on. What I'm going to avoid is anything like, well, this is the way I think we should do it, because I'm going to be, I'm a short timer now. In addition with talking with district staff and legal counsel about how we approach different things and recommendations, I'll also be talking to Mr. Clemens. But I think realistically, we are talking about a town hall meeting that's most likely in December, or if not, immediately after the beginning of the new calendar year.
I would think early January would be better because people will be paying more attention to the election by then.
I think so.
Yeah. And that's still 2 months beforehand. So,
yeah,
but
mid-January.
Just say right after. I wouldn't even, first week of January or to hit it real fast. And I don't know if that's good or bad. Sometimes I think in the holiday season, people are in the giving, mood. After January 1st, we start seeing our credit card bills. And go, oh, no, what did I do? But, again, I think based on timing, yeah.
Madam Chair.
Would there be any potential of having two town hall meetings?
Oh, for sure.
Here's my issue. There are some people in our community that don't like to go out at night. And there's some people in our community that work all day that can only come out at night. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to have a town hall meeting in the daytime, like an afternoon, and we need to have another one at night. It can be the same program. It could be 2 days apart, but just so that everybody had an opportunity to come if they wanted to.
That's a good idea.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. We can do the road show.
Yeah.
I just don't know how much we can trust this survey, though, because there's only 157 people who skewed older and wealthier than most residents of Oceano. There's about 8,000 residents in Oceano. According to Godby's presentation in April, there's 3,811 voters in the district. And they were intending to interview up to 250 voters. So they did a little over half that many, not even two-thirds.
And I was able to follow up with Mr. Godby regarding your question, and I got a response from him right at the end of the day. And what he spoke to regarding the number of responses was that they hit it as intensely as they could, and 157 was just where they got. I had a follow-up question, which was, how does that affect the margin of error? Because, I was recalling both my statistics classes back from college, which... one of those individuals who actually loves statistics. And he said what it did is the reduced sample size reduced the margin of error from about 5.8% down to about 7. I mean, increased the margin of error from 5.8 to about 7.5. So the smaller sample size increased the margin of error 1.7%, again, from 6 to 7. I think that the summary of all tells us that it's more likely that, we can get a 50% vote yes, but not a two-thirds. That the challenges of, or the likelihood or the probability of actually getting a two-thirds voter approval is really going to rest with a lot of public education and, ultimately... Again, the affordability issue is going to be a big question in a lot of people's minds, and
I think we knew that before we spent $27,000 on this survey, though.
Yeah, I agree. The so what's the benefit of the survey is in some of the details then. One of the things that they mention is that words do matter. Focus on the positive points of, you know, what Five Cities Fire Authority is doing for the community, and just maintain a strong focus on those positive points. There are little questions that, for example, when in responding to some of the criticisms that we might see out there, people are generally concerned about pensions and those types of costs hitting public agencies. And as the individual from public comment spoke, you know, those types of impressions can really have a big effect on people. The fact is that the district doesn't have a significant unfunded pension liability. So even though that's a concern out there in the public in general, and it's shown in our survey as well, what the survey does is it gives us the information to really focus in on certain specific things that what has the district been doing that people might be concerned about, or how is the pension situation in Oceano compared to the pension situation in other areas? So the big picture about, you know, is it, you know, 50% or two-thirds or where the voters would start right now? Yeah, no big surprises there. But some of the details in the survey, I think, help with the dialogue with the community. And that's, I think, where the bigger value is.
You mentioned, Director Vogel, that you thought most of the surveys were taken from wealthier and older individuals?
Yeah, if you look at, I think it's towards the back of the detailed pages. It gives it's page 11 and 12. It gives the breakdowns of, so I think most of the people, if you look under D, age, 50 to 69 years old is 39%, and almost 25% is over 70. So most of the people in the survey were over 50.
In talking to Mr. Godby about that, one of the things that he said, I mean, I didn't focus on the specific thing that you identified, Director Rokogel, here, but he did say that he felt it was relatively consistent with where we see voting patterns, right? They get less responses from the younger population, greater responses from the older population, and the people who tend to vote more regularly or more committed to voting tend to be the older population and less so than the younger population.
I've read that too, but this seems even a little more skewed than
the
statistics I've seen on voting ages.
The income is what bothers me, the 48.9 on the 50 to 74, which I think...
Are you still on page 11?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and age
that many households here in Oceano are not at
the 50 to 75. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the median is definitely below that.
And we know our population here is about 50% Latinx, but only 26% were Hispanic and Portuguese, 64% European, which I guess is probably Caucasian.
Which means we're going to have to do a lot of outreach.
We do need to do a lot of education.
Well, you did 157 people.
And you got to remember that I think they listed the registered voters, but in our, now this may be a little different election. It may be higher than 50%, but usually only about 50% of the registered voters in Oceano turn out. You just get that by totaling the board members. But I think this might be a little different because of the presidential primary.
It's going to be, it's the primary. So there'll be a lot
of
voters.
May be more turnout, which could benefit us.
Well, you know, we had that meeting that included county representatives, Supervisor Pishong and Supervisor Gibson, when we met with ad hoc committees from Oro Grande and Grover as well. And Supervisor Pishong, part of his career has been polling and working on campaigns and stuff. His general statement to us was that if there was a time, then it's going to be March 2020 for the very reasons that the presidential primary and his general intuition about voter turnout and, you know,
more
the likelihood.
People.
Yeah.
More younger people.
I also understand that he was doing a little bit of informal work as well with Templeton, and I'm not sure if that's why they decided to do a special election rather than do a presidential primary, but those types of, you know, issues do, you know, the demographic differences vary on a community-by-community basis. And I agree that, you know, the survey results are only going to tell you so much. A lot of public outreach. Ultimately, at the end of the day, it's a community decision. And again, I encourage, you know, we just need to be respectful of what the community decides.
I had a question on the Independent Citizen Oversight Committee. Is that something that came out of the survey results?
No, that was part of looking at what other agencies are doing.
Are they doing that in Templeton?
Yes.
And how does that typically work?
Well, it's actually prescribed in the ordinance.
Yeah, I see that. I see how you qualify, but like in practice, what would that look like?
I would normally expect like, you know, two meetings a year. One is during the budget time, and then because what's being proposed, assuming we're still part of Five Cities Fire Authority, the Oversight Committee would look at the details of the actual budget that's being proposed by Five Cities Fire Authority. And then secondly, we do have to do an annual report of money that is collected, and it's Government Code Section 50075.3, and it has to be done no later than January 1st of each fiscal year. So I see that there's two areas of review for the Citizens Oversight Committee. One is what's being proposed in the budget and is it all appropriate? And then second is the review of the annual report.
Okay. I do have one concern with that, and that is we don't have a lot of citizen engagement, as in people who actually come out and participate. I mean, it's great to see all the folks here tonight. Sometimes we hardly have anybody. But what do we do if we don't get three people who want to be on this oversight committee? Can we put some weasel words in there that would let us out of that or let us have less than three people? Or?
Oh, I think we could find three people in the whole community. For too many, I've already got a nomination. I've already got somebody who for two meetings a year for nothing.
We could think of something. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a good question again, and legal counsel and I will work on that question for coming back on the 23rd. Jeff's first initial thought is, don't know why. So is it encouraging independent citizens to sit on the oversight committee? Maybe it's language that in the event that there are not a sufficient number of citizens that are interested, then board members would, you know, act in that capacity or something like that. But we'll look at some options and come back on the 23rd with possible language options.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so where we're at now is we're going to come back on the 23rd. Are we to give a direction to go with either one, or are you going to bring them both back, or?
Well, it's, you know, again, the board's discretion. I think that from what I heard earlier, that having both of the options still on the table in the event that, you know, we hear some specific feedback from the community is a good idea.
Okay.
So yeah. We can bring both of them back.
Okay, then why don't we do that? Is there any other?
And then...
Is there any way we could come up with some more simplified benefit schedule than this? Because... what I'm hearing is that this is too complex and there would be too many people protesting and everything, but if there is some way that we could come up with something that's a little more straightforward, maybe it would be more...
How would you get it equitable?
A better option?
I mean, if you limit the category, if you narrow it down, it's going to be less equitable than it is now. There's already challenges to it now in you know, I mean...
But the way it is right now, it doesn't even look to me like a viable option because it's so unwieldy. I mean, what I would see as a resident coming to the hearing in a couple of weeks is this simple, you know, everybody pays $180 per parcel, and this really complex, messy thing that has holes in it. And that to me is not even presenting a second option.
So I think what you're really pointing to, Director Replogle, is just the basic inherent challenges of the formula approach, because we could reduce the number of categories, but then we're subject to more interpretation. We could expand the number of categories, reducing the interpretation, but making something complex even more unwieldy. So we can.
Well, unless it's based on an objective measure like the zoning.
Yeah. You know, again, without any real good, and we researched, you know, guidance on how to do that, it just is.
Well, this isn't based on really any research either, except pulling what other communities did for their beauty parlors and.
Right, it's comparable analysis is what it is. And often that's the best that you have is how are your other local communities considering this type of an issue. You know, a consistency type of an approach is, you know, even appraisals of properties go with, well, what does that do to compare to the other properties? So
how would you, I have three different zones on my property. It's agricultural, single, residential, historic.
Yeah.
Where do you go? I mean, how do you compare that to? I mean, I just don't see zoning because zoning doesn't mean anything until you put a building on it.
Your single property has three different zones. Three different zones.
I'm agricultural and or single residential historic. I have three zones. You might say I can put a pig and a horse on there. I can put a house on there, and no matter how you figure it, it's historic. Which is another layer of protection. Federal Historic District.
What do we do about
historic? I didn't
realize that there was more than one zone that a property would have attached to it.
There's like commercial, retail, and you say, well, what kind of, or industrial commercial zone?
Yeah.
Zoning, so then you'd have to decide, well, is this more industrial, or are you going to charge? You know, it's just too many.
Well, does anybody?
I don't see it.
Does anybody else have a suggestion on how it could be
flat,
less complex?
Flat rate.
I think the flat rate's a way to go because it's too confusing for people. They're going to say, we don't want this.
Open a whole new layer of bureaucracy to try to come up with.
Every parcel number gets a $15 a month fee.
I think it's fair to do it that way.
Yeah, a lot
you
of
try to get. You're always going to have if you try to say, "Well, I'm a restaurant." Well, I'm not really a restaurant. You know what I mean. Everybody's going to have a different. Say the melodrama. Well, it's a theater. So how do you do a theater?
Well, that's not even covered in the schedule, as far as I can tell.
And if that's what you'd have to try to make up a whole formula for,
and also in housing,
going to make it.
I just use housing as an example because I've done some work on there's also very weird situations where there's buildings and lots and different people's houses on the same block of property, which has one ID number, which is one block, and there's two houses and a field in between and a piece of road and somebody else's corner of a house. So you start looking at zoning or even parcel numbers, you're going to have problems. So, I mean, I'm just saying it's not... Even though the flat fee is not 100%.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that explanation.
I mean, you know.
I'd like to see both resolutions come back at the next meeting.
So I think that's our direction, I believe.
Yes.
Did we have another public comment request?
You haven't called public comment, I don't believe.
Well, that's what I was going to do, is call public comment. I think we'll do it. If we haven't, we will. Okay. Mr. Flores, would you want to find it?
Hi, thank you. Eugene Flores, resident property owner here in Oceano. Just a couple of comments and questions from listening tonight. Quite informative, coming in, honestly speaking, late into this process. But given the unknown of the future, you know, other than it's coming at us fast, some of us faster than others, and the potential changes in the community and sort of the unknowns about future new constructions for residences or business options, is it possible in this measure that the word amended be added along with repeal, meaning it seems like you vote for it and it's in, and yes, you have the opportunity to cancel it, but do we also have an opportunity to amend it, given that maybe we decide to switch from one provision to the other? And then if that's not possible, or either way, I guess the question is, would repeal require a whole separate, I'm presuming it would require a whole separate measure to be voted on by the registered voters? And then, I don't know, if you want me to stop, I will.
No,
or,
go okay. ahead and then we'll answer.
And then the other, again, just in listening to all, and I'm sure lots of this will come out in the public information centers, but I think of it, from what I've seen and read just tonight, again, honestly, if Oceano's part of this joint services, the operation's a little unknown. It's a lot unknown, and it seems a little confusing to me given what data is presented in the agenda item. For example, Oceano's represented as 20% of the population, but so far represents 15% of the calls, while Arroyo Grande is 45% of the population, but accounts for 52% of the calls. So how does the operation system work related to associated costs, meaning what if one of our two neighbors actually uses more services than what we've budgeted for or generated? Is there some provision in which they pick up extra costs, not out of the general pool? I don't know. Again, a lot of unknowns, and that I'm sure will come out in the informational opportunities. So thanks very much.
Good question. Thank you. Is there anything you can... Is there any other public comment on this item? Anyone else? Okay.
With the respect to amend or repeal, the only really option is to repeal, because it would take a separate measure to create a new special tax. You just can't go in there and say we want to amend what was previously... Yeah, the basic requirement to repeal for petitions, I believe, is 15% of registered voters in order to file a petition and to put it on a ballot measure, and then 50% to repeal it. The idea that can voters initiate a special tax through a petition, that is true as well. In fact, legal counsel had at a prior meeting described a court interpretation where it's when your body puts an election item that the Constitution says it has to be approved by 2/3 of the voters, but when it's done by a petition of voters through an initiative, that threshold is apparently 50% rather than 2/3. So, again, voters do have the ability to petition, to put something on the ballot, to get something approved. They also have the ability to repeal something that was previously approved, but those are two separate actions. And so we don't see a situation where a petition could say repeal and amend. It would be two different votes, two different actions.
All right, so We're going to move on to our next.
Okay, so the direction that I, you know, generally stand, we're going to include both options on the October 23rd, and we're going to look at some language regarding the Citizens Oversight Committee.
Okay. All right, thank you. Now, do we go back to the... Now we're going to go back to closed session. Do we have any other hearing items or correspondence?
Well, the last discussion item is to really review correspondence. And I wanted to have that, the response from the county chair on the letter that we sent to them. I wanted to talk about that under correspondence because it really begs as to whether your board wants to have a future agenda item on that. The idea is that the basic protocol on written correspondence is providing your board with written correspondence that might prompt a future agenda item, because we don't send all of the correspondence that we have to your board.
So to put it on the agenda would be for what reason?
So the question that your board authorized President Austin, or the questions are, the based on the county earlier in the year adopted a policy that in divestiture proposals that go through the Local Agency Formation Commission, whereas the district would have the initial obligation to create a plan for services and who would provide those services, the county's recently adopted policy kind of says, well, wait a second, we're going to determine the plan for services if we're going to be providing the service. And so the letters, and with all resources available. So the letter said, okay, county, what would be your expectations in a divestiture? Would you expect transfer of this structure, the fire station, to the county? Would you expect a transfer of the sheriff's substation? Because, again, the county is paying us about $115,000 a year, and maybe they'd see that as a cost-saving measure to help pay for emergency medical and fire services. Would the county expect the transfer of the solid waste franchise? We receive a little bit less than $100,000 a year for our local programs. And even though that's the furthest thing from, you know, fire and protection services, we know that in the bankruptcy of Los Osos, that part of the settlement of those bankruptcies is that Los Osos CSD did transfer the franchise authority from the Los Osos CSD over to the county. And then fourth, is there other real property assets that the county would expect from the district in order to, because the county's strategic report on fire services and unincorporated communities that they published last year, again, had indicated that it was going to cost the county upwards of $500,000, $600,000 a year to run a fire station out of Oceano, above and beyond what would be the normal expectations in a property tax transfer. So normal expectations is that the vast majority of the property tax revenues that are allocated to the district, the county would expect that. We would plead to be able to maintain some of them for the lighting services that we provide. That's maybe 5%. If the county were to demand a transfer of the fire station, it's really kind of hard to argue with that. I think what we would plead is to say that we would want to continue to use the board chambers for board meetings. I don't think that would be any skin off their back. I think that the likelihood of having to transfer the fire station to the county means that we would have to relocate administrative staff currently and find another place to, you know, run our office, because I think more than likely they would look at, you know, the space there for sleeping quarters, the chief's office, and the other things that are common in a fire station. So those I would normally expect, but the really questions to me come in, well, what would the county's position on the sheriff's substation be, and what would the county's position on other real property and on the franchise agreement be? And so that prompted the letter that your board authorized to send to the county. The response that we get was essentially that, well, look, it's too premature until you get into, you know, the actual divestiture process. And so then I called David Church and I asked him, hey, even before David Church, who's the executive director of LAFCO,
I go, what are, you know, your thoughts on the district filing an application for divestiture now, even prior to the March election? And, you know, he wasn't encouraging it or discouraging it. He didn't have an opinion on it. But he was pretty clear that he believes that the district has every right to file an application to initiate the divestiture. And so the question really is, does your board want to consider that as a future agenda item? And
I
recommend, you know, that we talk about that as a future agenda item.
As far as I'm concerned, I think so, because we asked specific questions and we got no answers. And I guess those are the very important things that we need to know.
And I think it's important.
Needs to know if the county, you know, the ownership of the fire station, the substation, and
because those
waste, all that, we would have to move and build another. I mean, that's
right. The county's position on some of those measures has a high probability of affecting the fiscal condition of the district, right? And so for the voters in the community to make the best and well-informed decision as possible, having answers to those questions would be appropriate. I can understand the county's hesitancy initially, but again, getting into the LAFCO process, in a sense, says no, county, we really need to have some policy answers from the Board of Supervisors so that our voters can make the best decision possible.
So what is everyone?
I'd like to see it on the agenda.
Yeah.
As soon as possible.
Let's
have it on the agenda.
Yeah, we'll have it on the agenda next meeting.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay, then we'll go back to the warrant for Godby.
My recommendation at this time is we move into closed session.
Okay.
And then, Carrie, I think the closed session order, you're scheduled to be in one of the items. And so we'll take the other item first, and you can see if you can find Godby's purchase order, and then we can review that when we come out of closed session.
Okay, is there any comment on public comment on closed session? This is the Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District, and you want to read what our closed session is?
No, seeing no public comment, the board will adjourn to public comment on item 5B and C. Item B, pursuant to Government Code 54956.9A, this is conference with legal counsel regarding the Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District. On 5C, pursuant to Government Code 54956.94, conference legal counsel to determine whether to initiate litigation. There's one matter.